Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, Donald Trump's takeover of the Republican Party is effectively complete now that Ronna McDaniel has announced that she will be resigning her post as the head of the RNC in early March. And that could be the beginning of the end for the Republican Party. I'll explain why in just a moment. Donald Trump has appealed the New York fraud ruling against him, but oddly enough, he hasn't put up the money that would actually allow him to do so. So at the moment, that appeal cannot go anywhere. And Trump is also, even though he had a big victory in South Carolina this past weekend, he is suffering from a very severe lack of enthusiasm, and more importantly, a lack of campaign cash that could doom him in November. And Republicans in the House of Representatives are pushing for yet another government shutdown, the fourth one in 9 months, if they do not get their horrific demands met. All that and much, much more coming up on this week's Ring of Fire. And don't forget, if you want the full show every week, sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com. And for Ring of Fire every day of the week, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. Ronna McDaniel, the chairwoman of the RNC, announced this week that she is, in fact, going to be stepping down in early March, actually March 8th, when they have their little meeting in Houston, Texas. Now, the funny thing about this to me is the fact that reports that Ronna McDaniel was going to resign as chair of the RNC after the South Carolina primary have been out there for weeks, and the RNC denied it. They're like, no, she has no plans to do this. This isn't a thing that's going to happen. And then literally exactly as expected, it happened the same way that it was originally reported that it was going to happen. So RNC's last act, or McDaniel's last act as RNC chair, was, of course, to basically just lie to the entire country that she had no intention of resigning. But in her resignation announcement, she specifically said that it's time to let the nominee, which will be Donald Trump, pick the new leadership of the party, which, of course, is going to destroy the entire Republican Party. Here's what she said. I have decided to step aside at our spring training on March 8th in Houston to allow our nominee to select a chair of their choosing. The RNC has historically undergone change once we have a nominee, and it has always been my intention to honor that tradition. Actually, let me go ahead and stop you right there, because that's not the case. No. You see, Ronna, what actually happens is we don't usually, or not we, I'm not a part of this, but y'all don't usually pick the new person, one, until you actually have a firm nominee that has already gone through the, you know, coronation process at the convention. But two, it usually happens after the presidential election. You don't change horses midstream. But here you are, knowing what a failure you are, and you're like, screw it, I'm not going to take the fall for whatever's going to happen this year. I'm going to let Donald Trump pick somebody else. And we all know who it's going to be. Trump has made it abundantly clear. He's going to pick Michael Whatley, an election denier who is the head of the Republican Party of South Carolina. So Whatley's going to be the chair. Laura Trump is going to be the co-chair. And Laura Trump has already vowed that every penny, those are her words, every penny that comes into the RNC goes directly to Donald Trump. Trump has solidified his control of the Republican Party. It's now over. And I mean that in so many different ways, too. Not only is Trump's hold over the party permanent, it's done. He has it. That's his party. But it's over in the sense that the Republican Party is over with. It's done. There is no more. Once Donald Trump gets his people, especially if it's a family member, in place at the RNC, you cannot call yourself a Republican and say that you do not support Donald Trump. Those days are over. Okay, there's no more splitting those factions between normal Republicans and MAGA Republicans. You're all in the same bed together. So if you choose to stay in the Republican Party at this point, you're choosing to let Donald Trump call the shots for you no matter what. There is no more buffer of the RNC. Trump has that too. Again, he doesn't have it technically yet, but he is going to have it in a week and a half. So if you consider yourself a never Trump Republican, that is a phrase that is going to go out the window. Because as long as you remain a card-carrying member, registered member of the Republican Party, you're a member of the Trump Party. Whether you want to be or not, that is the new reality that you face. If you do not want to be there, you can change your voter registration and get out. That is your only option. Otherwise, you are officially a Trump supporter. We also know that the RNC only has $8 million as we head into campaign season. $8 million! State-level Republican parties going bankrupt left and right. They have no money. Donors don't want to give money. I'm sure they will eventually come around. Donald Trump has gone out, started to beg them to give money. But at the same time, once he solidifies that control, if Laura Trump does start funneling money straight to Donald Trump, especially to pay his legal fees, those donors are going to stop. And they're going to let the Republican Party completely implode, which is what will happen. Okay, the implosion of the Republican Party is not something that could happen. When Trump takes control, it is something that will happen. It's just a matter of how quickly will it happen. Could it be within a matter of months? Most likely. Could it be 6 months? Possibly. Could it be a year out? I don't even give them that long. I think by the end of this year, the Republican Party, as we once knew it, as history once knew it, will officially be dead, and Donald Trump will be their cause of death. On Monday, Donald Trump's lawyers filed a notice with the Court of Appeals in the state of New York that they were officially going to appeal the New York fraud trial ruling. Now, once Engoron handed down his decision, the clock began ticking, and according to the estimates, Donald Trump is being charged roughly $112,000 per day in interest every day that he doesn't pay that $355 million verdict against him, which will eventually add up to about another $100 million. So technically the ruling is about $455 million. Filing a notice of appeal does not stop the clock on that interest either. And based on the appeal, what reporters and legal experts have gone through, they don't even ask the appellate court to stop the clock on the interest. Maybe that was an oversight, but that seems like not a smart decision. Either way, the interest is still accruing. But what's even more interesting to me, because obviously everybody's talking, oh, he's appealing it, he's appealing it. They filed a notice of appeal, okay? Let's first get that straight out of the way. Secondly, they didn't put up the cash. There is not a single report I have read, there is nothing I can find indicating that Donald Trump put up the cash that is necessary in order for him to be able to appeal it. Nothing. Because let's not forget, here's how this works. In order for Donald Trump to appeal this ruling, he has to take a sizable chunk of the $355 million judgment, not including any of the $100 million in interest. He's got to take a portion of the $355 million verdict and put it into a court-monitored escrow account to show that, yes, I have the money, yes, I can pay it, and I'm not just appealing it to avoid having to pay it. Now, we don't know what that percentage could be. It could be 100%. It could be 50, it could be 10, it could be 1. But either way, nothing indicates that Donald Trump has actually put any money or assets into an escrow account, which means this appeal cannot technically at this moment even move forward until he does that. That is the most important thing to understand about this. The notice of appeal is not necessarily the official filing. So, a lot of misconceptions about all that. Secondly, and I feel like this is something I'm probably going to have to discuss a lot in the coming years, an appeal does not allow Donald Trump to retry the case. What his legal team will have to do when they go to the appellate court is prove that somehow, some way, Engoron or Attorney General Letitia James screwed something up that could have the potential to undo the initial verdict. So if they're not able to prove that Engoron screwed up, if they're not able to prove that Letitia James screwed up, then the appeal will get dismissed. Again, they don't get to retry the case. You can't go to the appellate court and just say, well, I don't like their ruling, I want a different one. That is not how the appellate process here in the United States works. You have to be able to prove that something happened that had it not happened, and what happened was wrong, you could have won the case. If you can't do that, this thing is going to get laughed out of court in a matter of days. But Trump's lawyers, according to the filing, are planning on arguing that Engoron illegally somehow did not go with an appellate court's previous ruling from last year that said he had to narrow his scope due to statute of limitations. Which, by the way, for all practical purposes, based on everything we've seen, he actually did do that. He did narrow the scope. So that claim will fail on its merits because he did. They even mentioned that, by the way, at one point when a witness was being questioned, Engoron had to be like, nope, hold up. You know, we can't talk about those years because of the statute of limitations. So we already have evidence in trial that Engoron did go with the appellate court's ruling about the statute of limitations for certain years of alleged fraud. So that one's out of the way. Second claim they're making is that Letitia James used a law that's typically, that's the word they use, typically used to protect consumers. So she used the wrong law, or a law that's not usually used to go after people like Trump. That argument is also dead on arrival. So he didn't put up the money, so the appeal technically cannot go forward. The two legal arguments he wants to make have already been debunked. So all he's doing is delaying the inevitable, and while he delays it, he's being charged $112,000 a day in interest. Even though this happened nearly a week ago, I didn't have the opportunity to talk about it, and I do want to take some time to talk about what is very obviously a clear sign of Donald Trump's declining mental health. And it happened last Thursday when he was giving his little speech to the National Religious Broadcasters International Christian Media Convention. Well, y'all need to work on maybe shortening that name to something that rolls off the tongue a little better. But either way, it's a group of Christian broadcasters. And during his speech, Donald Trump claimed that not only is President Biden evil for his persecution of Christians, which for the record isn't a thing, but he also said that migrants along our southern border were pouring over Steak Mountain. Steak Mountain. Which is also, much like Biden's persecution of Christians, not a thing. Steak Mountain doesn't exist. It sounds delicious, but it's not a thing. Here is Donald Trump in his own words. Quote, "The people are pouring over. It's sort of known as Steak Mountain, Steak Hill, snake, a lot of snakes. I think they're rattlesnakes. Between the rattlesnakes and the rough terrain and the steepness, they said nobody's coming. Oh, the people coming over by the thousands. It's crazy. And we let them come over. We let them do it. Our country can't withstand. No country can withstand what's happening to us. The cities are being inundated. They're being overrun. They're taking the parks from children. Them. No more baseball fields, no more soccer fields, no more anything. It doesn't sound very serious, knocker fields or baseball fields, very serious. Their way of life has changed, and they're being treated better than longtime American citizens. They're being treated better than our soldiers, our veterans are being treated. They're staying in world-class hotels. The whole thing's crazy. What's happening to our country?" Those aren't even complete thoughts. Like, let's forget about Steak Mountain or Steak Hill or snake, like he said. That mental gaffe, like, I can't even process it. But they're taking over the baseball fields. Like, you can't, what does that even mean? What does that even mean? Somebody, somewhere, send me a photograph of any baseball field, t-ball field, whatever, here in the United States, that's just packed filled with migrants, people that came over specifically Steak Mountain. Which, again, if Steak Mountain existed, trust me, I would be there in a heartbeat. Sounds delicious, but it's not a thing. Them taking over baseball fields or knockerball fields, also not a thing. This man is lying through his teeth, ironically enough, to a group of alleged Christians, and they're just applauding. They love this incoherent drivel. Like, Donald Trump sounds like he's up on stage having a stroke And they're just like, yay, good job. He can't string two words together to form half a sentence, you idiots. And you're loving it. You love this dementia-riddled lunatic that you put up on stage. That's not the end of it either. He continued. Let's call these brave Americans what they really are. Persecuted. Christians, they're being persecuted. And let's call their imprisoned and imprisonment. They are being imprisoned by Joe Biden and his people. Evil people. He's surrounded by very evil people. They are, I believe, just doing whatever they want to do. I don't believe they have any leadership at all. Joe Biden, because of his gross incompetence, is a threat to democracy. Big threat to democracy. Again, you sound unhinged. You're very incoherent. Like, that speech alone is probably enough to convince mental health professionals to take you for a 72-hour hold. Christians are not being persecuted. Like, you couldn't even tell me where the nearest church to you is. Meanwhile, President Biden is in fact a Catholic. Okay, we know Biden's faith. We don't even know what denomination you allegedly are. Not that I personally care. But Christians are not being persecuted. That's not a thing. That's as real as Steak Mountain, folks. This man is a lunatic. This man is dangerous. But the real lunatics, the people that are even crazier, are the people sitting in that audience applauding him for sounding like he's having a stroke. So Donald Trump obviously had a pretty significant victory this past weekend in South Carolina, beat Nikki Haley on her home turf. It's all downhill from here for his campaign, right? He's got nothing else to worry about. Even before that, technically, he had nothing to worry about because Nikki Haley was never, according to the polls, a legitimate threat. Trump is on pace to definitely be the Republican nominee. Now, having said that, things are actually going very badly for him. I know that's weird to say because he's won every primary so far, but he is not a winner. Because when you look behind the facade, when you look past the results in these primaries, Trump is in a lot of trouble for two reasons. The first and most obvious reason that Donald Trump is having a lot of problems is the fact that he's basically out of money. Financially speaking, Donald Trump is almost bankrupting both of his super PACs, the Save America Political Action Committee and the Make America Great Again Incorporated Political Action Committee. Those PACs have paid over $100 million in just Donald Trump's legal fees. That is money that is supposed to be used for TV ads, paying to send him around the country to hold these rallies. More on that in a moment. But instead, it's going to people like Alina Haba, who just, darn it, keep on losing for him. All of Trump's lawyers continue to lose for him, and he is paying them millions and millions of dollars. But not out of his pocket. No, that's coming out of the pockets of his small dollar donors, who, according to recent reports, are tapped out. The amount of money that Donald Trump is receiving from those small dollar donors who made up the bulk of his donors is dwindling, and it's dwindling fast. His campaign is now burning through cash faster than they can bring it in each month, which means, according to estimates, by the beginning of July, both of his super PACs are projected to be zeroed out. No money. He's not going to get any help from the RNC, even if he takes it over, because they only got $8 million on hand. They're having the same kind of donor problems that Trump himself is having. So there's no money for Republicans to go around. His second problem, and this is a bigger one, and this is one that few people have been paying attention to. But this is something that, by the way, has actually been going on for a couple years. Trump's biggest problem, and this is weird to say even with him winning, but his biggest problem is a lack of enthusiasm. Here's what I mean by this. When we look at his results in the Iowa caucus, right? Huge, huge victory for Donald Trump in the first contest in Iowa. Record low turnout in that Iowa caucus. The primaries that have taken place since then, also low turnout, not necessarily historically low, but lower than average. So Republicans, they're showing up and they're voting for Trump, but fewer of them are showing up at all. There is a significant lack of enthusiasm. Now, Maybe that's due to the fact that most Republicans look at this and they say, oh, well, Trump's going to win anyway. I don't need to go. I'm not going to waste my time. He's got this. I'm not worried. Maybe. Or we can take more evidence from his rallies. What's been happening at his rallies for the last several years, folks? I've been talking about it both here and over at Fair and Balanced. People are leaving. They're leaving 10, 15 minutes after he starts speaking, even if he's going to speak for 2 hours. They hear 10 minutes of it. They start heading for the exits. We've seen the video clips. I've shown the video clips. People are sick and tired of it. They don't want to hear Donald Trump get up on stage and throw himself a 2-hour pity party, whining about the 2020 election or rambling like an incoherent lunatic. They're tired of it. But it's not just the people leaving. He's also getting smaller and smaller crowds showing up at all. At his recent event on Thursday evening, more than 300 chairs, empty chairs, had to be removed before Trump would take the stage. They didn't want him looking out over at all these empty chairs, so the organizers frantically went out there, moved all the empty chairs, kind of shoved everybody together to make it look packed. And that's not the first time that's happened this year. The empty chairs are becoming a problem. People are not showing up to listen to this guy. So they're not giving him money. They're not coming out to see him. And they're not necessarily coming out to vote for him in large numbers. So you look at all that data and you tell me that Biden's the one in trouble. No. All signs point to Donald Trump having a very serious problem that could definitely destroy his chances in the general election. Donald Trump submitted a filing in court this week trying to argue that he is so rich that he should not have to pay a bond as he waits to appeal the verdict in the E. Jean Carroll defamation trial. Now, this is a very interesting argument, right? I mean, Trump is out there telling the judge, telling the lawyers on the other side that I've got so much money that you don't have to worry about me paying if I lose because I've got so much money, which of course is not how these things work. In a civil trial, it is very common for a requirement of a bond to be paid so that in the event you lose your appeals or you lose any other post-trial motions, the money is secured and the plaintiff gets their award. Trump doesn't want to do that because he just has so much money. But here's what's going on. And this is what Judge Kaplan had to say about it. Mr. Trump has moved for an administrative stay of enforcement pending the filing and disposition of any post-trial motions that he may file. He seeks that relief without posting any security. The court declines to grant any stay, much less an unsecured stay, without first having afforded plaintiff a meaningful opportunity to be heard. So, E. Jean Carroll's lawyers have until tomorrow, February 29th, to respond to this. And Judge Kaplan's kind of little underhanded with his letter here. He's like, hey, listen, these a-holes, they don't want to pay up. And they're trying to get me to just say, no, he doesn't have to pay. What do you guys think about that? And I think we all know what you think about it, but I just want to make sure that I give you the opportunity to let the court know what you think about it. So when I say that Trump is arguing that he's too rich to have to pay a bond, here's what I mean. This is what they filed in court. Having argued to the jury that President Trump has great financial resources, plaintiff is in no position to contradict herself now and contend that she requires the protection of a bond during the brief period while post-trial motions are pending. This fact nullifies risk to the judgment creditor and weighs heavily in favor of an unsecured stay. Now, what they're saying is that E. Jean Carroll mentioned in the trial that Trump's got a lot of money. So she knows he's got a lot of money, right? So if she knows he's got money, he knows he's got money. Why do we have to pay money? Well, here's the kicker. In the New York fraud trial, Donald Trump had admitted to Attorney General Letitia James that he only has about $400 million cash on hand. All the rest of his billions of dollars in worth is in property holdings. It is not liquid. He would have to sell off the properties to get the cash. So he's only got $400 million, according to him, in the bank. Now, when you add up the $88 million total that he owes E. Jean Carroll from the two trials, plus the $355 million that he owes the state of New York from the fraud trial, that's more than $400 million. So he does not, in fact, have enough money to cover both. And he knows that. So essentially, even though he's saying, look, I'm really rich, I don't have to post a bond, what he's actually telling the court is, I'm damn near broke, and I may not be able to pay. That's what I'm taking away from this, and based on the very simple math, it becomes obvious that no, Donald Trump cannot afford to pay off both lawsuits right at this moment, and therefore, he should be required to post a bond, since the E. Jean Carroll one came first, to make sure that she gets what she is owed, according to that jury. Carrie Lake is still having a bit of a meltdown over Meghan McCain's refusal last week to accept her olive branch after, in 2022, Carrie Lake had not only called her late father, the late Senator John McCain, a loser, but she also, at an event right before the election in 2022, called for all McCain Republicans to, quote, get the hell out of the Republican Party. Carrie Lake understands that she needs the McCain family endorsement in Arizona, still a very well-respected family in Arizona. And if she doesn't get it, she's in deep trouble with this primary that she's facing. So she has been repeatedly trying to make peace with Meghan McCain, but Meghan McCain said, and I quote here, no peace, bitch. And Carrie Lake over the weekend at CPAC continued her week-long meltdown about Meghan McCain's response. See, here's what happened. A reporter did ask Carrie Lake at CPAC, you know, played her the tape and showed her the post, and Carrie Lake said, oh, wow, acting like she hadn't seen it before. Like, that's what annoys me at first. She's like, oh, wow, you knew she posted that because you had actually responded to it. You can't act like this is the first time you're seeing it. But anyway, Carrie Lake goes, oh, wow. Well, I really do want peace. I want to come together. I don't want to fight with Americans. There's too much at stake. Now, that's a meltdown, sure. But what is that? Like, I don't want to fight with Americans. Are you trying to imply that the liberals that you try to fight every single day are somehow not Americans? Like, what is that? I don't want to fight America. Who do you want to fight then? Like, what country are you looking to go out there and fight? Because clearly you want to fight somebody that you think is not American. So I would love some clarification from Carrie Lake on what nationality she actually does want to fight. Because her statement implies that she does want to fight, just not with Americans, or at least with the people she considers to be Americans. But even before that interview at CPAC, Carrie Lake had done an interview with KTAR where she said this. She said, Republicans need to grow thicker skin and learn to take a joke. She said that McCain would have laughed off her comments. Yeah, you're a loser. I want all of your people to get the hell out of the party. Isn't that funny, John? I mean, you'd laugh, right? I don't think so. What's funny to me is that Carrie Lake is not moving on from this. This has now been going on for over a week. And Carrie Lake is still talking about it, still trying to get that endorsement from the McCain family, because she has burned all her bridges in Arizona, right? She's pissed off the voters with her phony claims of election fraud in 2022. She pissed off the party apparatus itself by recording secretly their president, who was forced to resign. She's pissed off the McCain family, so she's got the legacy Republicans in the state pissed off at her. And of course, polls show her getting her butt kicked by Democratic opponent Ruben Gallego, even if Kyrsten Sinema runs and splits the vote. There is no way this race ends right now with Ruben Gallego losing. And if Carrie Lake is the nominee, Republicans can guarantee that they're going to get their butts kicked. But y'all seem hell-bent on putting her up anyway. She now has the backing of the National Republican Senatorial Committee because her campaign itself is in deep, deep, deep debt. So you're going to push this loser, and it's going to come back to bite you. And I can't wait to watch that happen, personally. For the fourth time in 9 months, we are days away from a government shutdown. four times in 9 months, this Republican majority in the House of Representatives has pushed us to the brink of a government shutdown. So at this pace, by the way, about every 2 months, maybe 2 months and a week, Republicans almost put us in a government shutdown. And this one is scheduled to begin on Friday, March 1st, if the Republicans do not get their terroristic demands met. Now, what's been happening is, of course, every time we come up on one of these shutdowns, we pass a stopgap measure. Okay, we're going to fund for the next month and a half these programs so we can kind of keep limping along, and we'll just kick the can down the road. We'll deal with it when we deal with it, and blah, 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 blah. And then you never deal with it, right? You just get to kick the can further down the road again. And on Friday, we are headed for a partial government shutdown, I believe like 8 days after that. If a budget is not passed, we basically go into full government shutdown mode, which would be disastrous for the United States economy. It costs us hundreds of millions of dollars in economic activity per day during a government shutdown. And it would be a complete and total disaster for the Republicans in the House, since all of them are up for re-election this year. But here's what's happening behind the scenes. Talks continue to break down on any kind of negotiation because the hardline, extremist, borderline terrorist Republicans in the House are demanding several things that they know are not going to be in a final budget bill. Number one, they want to cut Biden's climate initiatives because screw the environment, right? Like that doesn't even make any sense. Like, hey, I know you want clean air, but what if we just didn't do that? Like, what a horrible, disgusting, evil human beings to do that. And that is what these Republicans are. They are evil, horrible human beings. There is no other way to describe them. Second thing they want to do is they want to eliminate the salaries for multiple cabinet members. So lots of people in Biden's cabinet would have their salaries reduced to $0 a year just out of spite, right? Just because fuck them, right? Why not? We hate them. Let's not pay them. Again, pure evil. They also want to cut abortion access for members of the military. So let's not let the women risking their lives for our country have say over their own bodies. They want to roll back protections for transgender people here in the United States. So we're attacking the LGBTQ community. And if those demands are not met, we're going to have a shutdown starting on Friday. These are terroristic demands. And for the record, there isn't a single one of these demands from these Republicans that would help literally anybody in this country. Every single demand they are making would hurt certain people. That's all these Republicans in Congress know how to do, is inflict pain upon their fellow Americans. That's it. It's hatred, it's bigotry, it's misogyny, and it's just downright evil that we have in Congress on the Republican side right now. And they're telling us that if we don't let them hurt people, they're just going to shut down the government, take their ball, and go home. This story right here is for anyone that is still out there saying there is no difference whatsoever between Democrats and Republicans. Something that, of course, is a very stupid argument to make. But listen to this. This week, President Biden announced that he was adding an additional $1.7 billion to fight hunger here in the United States, on top of an $8 billion investment that his administration made about 18 months ago. So we now have the Biden administration that has pledged close to $10 billion to fight hunger here in the United States. And here's how bad hunger is. As of 2022, the latest year for which we have statistics, around 17 million households experienced food insecurity nationwide. And more than 44 million people across the U.S. faced hunger, including one in five children. So we got 20% of kids in this country that do not have enough to eat. And Biden is actually doing something about it. $10 billion. Should it be more? Hell yeah, it should be more. I mean, $10 billion, if they were spending it on war, they would do that in a heartbeat, no problem. So it is kind of crappy, I think, that we're only doing $10 billion to fight hunger, but at least he's doing something. And here's what I say when I said this is about the difference between the two parties. Do you know what's happening in Republican-controlled states across the country right now? They're opting out of a federally funded program to provide free food for children, for needy children, during the summer months when they're not at school and cannot get free breakfast and free lunch. Republican governors, Arkansas, Texas, Alabama, many other red states all across the U.S. South are saying, thanks but no thanks, federal government. We don't want your money to feed hungry kids. We would rather let them starve over the summer. And yes, as I mentioned, that does include the state of Alabama that recently told us that embryos, unimplanted embryos, are in fact children. But then when it comes to real children with real needs and real bellies that are real empty, they say, go to hell, kids. We're not going to let the federal government give us money to feed you, you little bastards. Again, I get that there are some areas where there's not much daylight between the Republicans and the Democrats. A lot of it has to do with foreign policy, too, by the way. But you cannot sit there and make blanket statements like there's no difference between Republicans and Democrats. There damn sure is a difference, and we're seeing it right now. This story is Exhibit A. Democrats are trying to feed hungry kids. Republicans want them to starve to death. So you're going to look at a story like this and say, nope, I don't see any difference between Democrats and Republicans. If you want to highlight specific issues where you think there is no difference between the parties, then be my guest. Most of them, you're not even going to get an argument from me. But if you're going to make a blanket statement that on any policy ever, there's no difference between Democrats and Republicans, if you're going to try to argue to me that Democrats aren't doing anything to help needy families, then you're wrong. And you're lying, and you're choosing to ignore what's actually happening in this country. Because the difference is night and day. Democrats want to feed kids. Republicans are telling us they want them to starve. And that's it for the free portion of this week's Ring of Fire podcast. But if you want the full show every week, sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com.